read 395.
Adopt a new comprehensive plan for the city of Portland, Oregon.
We're going to begin by inviting any elected official that's here to come forward, any agency head, I see the head of TriMet's here, and any member of the Planning Sustainability Commission. I saw Eli Spivak. Are there any others? Gentlemen, would you both come forward? You'll have the courtesy of the House to begin to kick us off, and then we will proceed to the folks who signed up last time but did not get to be heard, and we'll continue in the sequence that we were operating under at the last hearing. Neil McFarland, welcome. Why don't you kick us off?
Thank you, Council President Fish and members of the Council. I'm very pleased to be here for the second time today. And I just wanted to hearken back to the reason that I was here first today, which was the work that we were doing together on the Southwest Corridor Plan. And what I wanted to do is really illustrate to you that that is just one facet of the work that we're doing together with the City of Portland. I want you to also recognize that we were recently recognized by the American Public Transit Association for this unique and strong partnership between the transit agency and the city as a model for the rest of the nation. And that's something that we emulate and are very proud of and want to make a real pattern. And we're building on that past success and taking our partnership even further. And that's reflected in the letter of intent that I signed last year along with Mayor and Commissioner Novick, who represented Planning, Sustainability, and Transportation Bureaus, respectively. Together, we've committed to heighten our cooperation around transit, make it safe, dependable, and easy to use for all Portlanders. And I think this is really key to many of the transportation challenges that come from the comprehensive plan and the need to, frankly, house another couple hundred thousand people within our city's boundaries. Our agencies are actively engaged in a joint work plan to do this through a variety of efforts, and I wanted to just note a couple of those. First, we've been working together with your staffs in both planning and sustainability and transportation related to our future of transit visions, which really look regionally at the future transit system and where lines need to be added and improved and other kinds of transit improvements need to be done. So that's been done in conjunction with your growing visions of the comprehensive plan and transportation system plan visions. And taking this down a level closer, I might point to the example of the partnership we have 122nd. And this is something that we now want to grow into something we call the Growing Communities, Growing Transit Communities Plan, where we work together to work on the goal of identifying and funding priority improvements for safety and transit access, and we provide added transit service in those same corridors. And what we have in mind is repeating that process in many other places of the city. I'd also just note that we're working together with city staff on another program called Enhanced Transit Corridors Plan. And this will really focus on identifying the operational and capacity constraints in areas where you right now have enormous amount of growth, where we have an enormous amount of demand, and we need to do work together to really make sure that we meet that and meet the vision of your comprehensive plan and transportation system management plan. Also wanted you to be to know that we are well aware of your Planning Sustainability Commission's interest in ensuring that East Portland is benefiting from a transformative transportation project as well. And I wanted to acknowledge particularly past Chair Andre Baugh and the current new Chair Catherine Schultz as great contributors to this effort. But we are working closely with the city to refine the alignment for the Powell Division Transit and Development Project. We are ensuring through our service enhancement plans that we are in alignment with that project. And we recognize the Powell Division vision will be nothing more than a backbone for improvements of service north-south through East Portland and East Multnomah County, which is something we've heard loud and clear from the community, from the staff, and from the leadership of the city. And so we wanted you to know that we are active partners in supporting the city action plan related to equitable development in those parts of our region, our service territory. So in conclusion, I look forward to continuing and strengthening our partnership with the city to ensure that we are a successful partner with you in implementing this comprehensive plan. We recognize that that is a challenge for all of us, but we are a partner with you in reaching shared goals of equitable economic development and housing and improved quality of life and certainly the reduction of our impact on our climate and our environment. And with that, I'd be pleased to answer any questions you have about our role.
Well, Neil, thank you. You were with us this morning, this afternoon. If you come back for a meeting this evening, we do have a door prize for you. So thank you very much.
I won't go for the trifecta. Thank
questions
you.
Or comments? Again, thanks for joining us. We actually have two PSC commissioners, and we'll start with Eli and then Maggie Talmadge. Eli?
Thank you for letting me join you guys here. I have submitted one piece of testimony signed by several members of the Planning and Sustainability Commission individually, because we're individuals at this point, supporting the proposed Amendment 45 to support missing middle housing and to expand that to corridors and centers, and also to support Fritz's recommendation that we not only provide 10,000 affordable regulated housing units, but fund it as well. And for my specific testimony, I want to talk about missing middle for a minute because it means different things to different people, and I want to kind of parse it a little bit. And the other handout I have for you is my coloring in project where I've sort of broken missing middle into two flavors. And I'm buying an ice cream parlor now, so I think in flavors. So one of them is the neighborhood flavor, which the concept is that there would be a type within existing neighborhoods anywhere in the city. We could have a medley of housing types that fit within an envelope that is smaller than what's currently allowed for a single-family house. So the idea is that this is compatible wherever you go. We scale down homes. This is exactly what the Residential Infill Project is grappling with, and say you can do have more flexibility within that volume. And you can do duplexes that way. You can do a corner triplex. You can do accessory dwellings. That's the kind of mix. The other form is the higher, more intense versions of it, which are really appropriate, at least for now, within a radius of the centers and corridors. Which is the amendment. And that's more things like the courtyard apartments, the townhouses, maybe bungalow courts. It's a larger scale, more appropriate in central locations. And maybe between those two, we get the more of what the City Club is recommending to allow missing middle everywhere. And I like Fritz's call it mosaic zoning. I mean, the name's kind of nicer. But to let us have that variety throughout the city. And I want to take just a minute to say why I think this is important, not just in the center, but outside of the city as well, which is that if you look to the history, the close-in neighborhoods, northwest and southeast, were both built out under the rules of the day, which allowed this eclectic mix of housing types that we appreciate today. We have big homes. We also have homes that have been divided up into little pieces. If you look at the zoning map of what's in place on the ground for the outer neighborhoods right now, it's all yellow. And that means that that's the recipe to ensure that the neighborhoods that are further out will be built out with large homes on large lots. That's the monoculture of housing. And it's not going to support the diverse household types, sizes, and ultimately density to support neighborhood quarters that we already benefit from in the close-in neighborhoods. I recommend that we allow this mix of housing types subject to scale throughout the city so that when the next suburbs get built out, they have a more eclectic mix of housing also. And just as one history little bit, if you go back on the third page of this little handout, you look at the Lads Edition neighborhood and areas nearby, that was all originally zoned multifamily. You could do anything you want there, and we have a whole range of mixes there. You also look at Laurelhurst, Portland's first suburb, zoned single family. Even today, that is very expensive, beautiful housing that's not available to almost anybody because it's so expensive. Whereas in the other parts of Southeast and Northwest also, you still have those little companion lots. So my hope is that if Portland looks to the next 20 years, we set the stage so that in East County, we can have those small units, the mix of housing that we already benefit from closer in. Thank you.
So is the term middle housing, is that a national term or did we invent it?
It comes from a guy, Dan Prolick, in the Bay Area, and it is not a defined term, clearly, but it represents, in general scale, the gap of housing between the large single-family homes and the four-plus-story apartments, and there's a lot of stuff in that range. So I'm trying to say maybe we should think about it. It's a useful term because it's missing, meaning that people aren't building it nowadays, largely because zoning is for single-family homes and for plex. But there's a lot of stuff in that range. And I'm not going to make the case that all that stuff should be available everywhere. I think that scares people appropriately. But there are areas where you can keep the scale of a single-family house and have more flexibility of what happens inside. Is that an answer to your question? I'm trying to parse it because I think that if you use the same word for everywhere, then people are afraid that it's...
Well, we had a discussion about calling it middle density housing because otherwise it for non-wonks or non-planning geeks, I didn't know whether it was middle income. I didn't know if it was middle density or middle of block.
I'm not really a fan of the name, frankly.
Yeah, so you wouldn't mind if we amended that.
I think that changing the name is fine.
Thank you.
Maggie?
Great. Thank you. So this is in regard to...
Put your name in the record.
Maggie Talmadge. I'm with the Planning and Sustainability Commission on one hand and with the Coalition of Communities of Color on the other. So this is in regard to M74 Eastmoreland, and I am pulling from Andre Ba's testimony that should be in front of you, should have been submitted this morning.
Got it.
So I just want to reiterate that the, you know, many of the members of the Planning and Sustainability Commission as individuals oppose downzoning this neighborhood for many reasons. We can look at, you know, City Club's recent affordable housing study and their opposition to downzoning, particularly in neighborhoods like Eastmoreland. But really what we want to ensure and what went into a lot of the deliberation when we were looking at Eastmoreland on the PSC is the fact that through the Portland plan and through the comprehensive plan, we're looking at equal distribution of benefits and burdens. That includes density, that includes affordable housing. So to downzone a neighborhood that frankly has a higher medium income, has a higher percentage of non-minorities, non-communities of color than, let's say, neighborhoods like Lentz, to downzone that really flies in the face of some of these principles that we've set forward. And we want to be sure that, again, the full city is accountable and is carrying their weight on providing affordable housing that provides opportunities for all Portlanders. We do not want to see a continued path of economic or racial segregation in this city. So we really, you know who signed on to that document. I don't have a full list, but I will be one of them. We really urge you to vote no on the amendment to downzone Eastmoreland, which is against what the PSC recommended.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Hands, please. Nope. No applause. So, Carla, do you have the list from the last hearing? So we're just going to pick up where we ended up, right?
Right, and people who have who did not get to speak last Thursday should have signed in outside with the people out there. And right now I show we have 22 people from last Thursday.
Okay.
We'll start with them three at a time. First three are Diane Williams, Carolyn Tyson, and Nancy Matella. They're 74, 75, and 77. And they'll be followed by Prakash Joshi, Charlotte Joshi, and Joseph Albert, 81, 82, and 85.
So if you're the next three, if you could come down and congregate, because we got about 100 people we're going to try to get to, and so we're going to try to move people in and out. Ladies, welcome. Thank you for your patience. Why don't you kick us off?
Hi, my name is Diane Williams, and thank you for the opportunity to hear me out today. I'm just an ordinary person who lived in Northeast Portland I was born in Portland, Oregon, raised in Portland, Oregon, and have grandchildren now in Portland, Oregon. I moved away for some quite a time ago, but I'm here for the amendment M42. So I noticed when I came back from moving to Washington to Oregon in 2005 how much things have changed. Time waits for no one. I know that for a fact. By coming back over the bridge again, I heard that there was going to be a toll. And I said, oh, okay, I can support that. And then I go, okay, let's go to Portland, back to my old neighborhood. I'm talking to my grandkids, by the way. And so I said, okay, let's go down Mississippi Street. Let's just see where it is. I was raised on Albina Street. From Mississippi all the way over to Martin Luther King, which was named Union Avenue when I was there. How things have changed. So coming down Mississippi Street was like, oh, look over there. Okay, the bowling alley's gone. Oh, that's a lot of buildings up there. You know, you notice the skyline has really changed and taken off. So I say to my grandkids, but look, hey, there's a building that I know about right there that used to be in the used to be a bowling alley, and I used to climb on that roof right there, and I wasn't supposed to, and I'd get in trouble. And, you know, I'd tell them all the history and all the stories, and their faces light up, and you turn the corner, and you get to Fremont. I went to Boise Elementary School from kindergarten to eighth grade. I kid you not. Coming past that school, just that school alone, seeing their faces light up, I'm getting emotional. Seeing their faces light up, seeing my face light up after being gone after 18 years, kind of saddens me a lot.
15 seconds.
Kind of saddens me a lot. But I get down to the street where I live down in Alvina, and I take them down that street, and I go, oh, the house that we lived in is, it's remodeled, but it's still there. So you want to see what an alley looks like? So I take them down the alley, get to the alley. We drive a little further. We get all the way to Williams and Vancouver, and I'm going, whoa, I don't know anything about this. So my thing is, if you could just give the neighborhood a little rest, because it's coming pretty fast.
Please, no applause, please.
I'm sorry, like not that. Just for me, but just for my grandkids, too.
Ms. Williams, just to summarize, you're opposed to the Amendment M42, correct?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your perseverance in coming back. Welcome.
Yes, my name is Carolyn Tyson. I'm the pastor of the Open Door House of Prayer. And I want to just recognize the president of the council and all the commissioners. What I'm here today is concerning the proposed change number 1514 and number 1471 and amendment M42. The Open Door House of Prayer has a substantial interest in the proposed change. The church bears the brunt of the change conditions. Open Door House of Prayer stands directly adjacent to the proposed change. The church was built in 1916. It's 100 years this year. The church is historic and has cultural value to the Boise Elliott neighborhood in question. Open Door House of Prayer was established in 1962. We have served the need of the community over 54 years. The community will stand to suffer damage and overdevelopment. This will diminish the now livable neighborhood. We have concerns on North Fremont, and this is where we're at. We're 348 North Fremont. Fremont is a local street. I have concerns. We have concern about the emergency vehicles and public transportation. Going east, going west, the hub is Fremont. It can go to the Southeast Portland. It can go to Good Samaritan, Emmanuel, OSU. It can go to the beach. It can go city center. And what we look at, it's that right in that area.
Reverend, could you just, I have to wrap up, I'm sorry.
Thank you. So what we're saying, we have seen the changes and we do not want it to be overused, the usable.
And we have you down as no to M42 again. Same here. So thank you both very much. Ma'am, welcome.
I'm Nancy Metella, excuse me. I'm here to discuss S21. I own the property at 1535 Southeast Alder in Buckman. It is two 5,000 square foot lots straddled by a 7,000 square foot house. Each lot is zoned R5, one of which is a corner lot. The building was built in 1898 as a single family dwelling and is considered architecturally significant. It was converted to a triplex in the 70s and later grandfathered in because it's non-conforming in an R5 zone. 5 years ago, I added a rental unit in the 2,000-square-foot basement of this building, but was told by the city I had to take it out because the 10,000 square foot property could not have four units. As an aside, 2 years later, a 30-unit building was put in one block from me on a smaller lot. Yes, it is zoned for commercial. I'm right up against it. After I was forced to take out the offending unit, I filed an official request to change my property zoning from R5 to R2.5. I was told it would be taken up with the comprehensive plan process, and so I resubmitted my request to the City Council last fall. I researched my immediate neighborhood and realized that my property wasn't the only non-conforming building. 40% of the R5 properties in the neighborhood actually are used as R2.5s and R1s. I then realized that my testimony shouldn't focus on my property, but should request the conversation, request the conversion of the whole neighborhood to R2.5, allowing the density closer to downtown. I realize I'm running out of time. I'm going to drop down for a very important paragraph. I realized all of my neighbors were asking that R5 be kept, and I was the only one that was asking for R2.5. I decided to call them and meet with them and find out what we could come up together with. And this is a really important thing, is face-to-face with people. I think that we have found something that can work, and that is talking about this middle thing that's happening.
Nancy, I have to ask you to wind up. We have your written testimony.
Yes, you
and
do.
It's very clear at the end what
okay.
you're asking for. So
yes.
It'll be made a part of the record.
If you can do the alternatives on duplexes and ADUs, we can make it work. Otherwise, there are going to be a lot of unhappy people. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Just so that everybody's clear, my amendment is pretty much to say what you just said, that recognize the mosaic of what's in Buckman and respect the built environment there. So your amendment to allow every R5 lot to be converted to a duplex if desired and every duplex to have at least one ADU, I think that's a very creative solution. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ladies, thank you very much. Next three, Carla.
Are Prakash Joshi, Charlotte Joshi, and Joseph Albert, 81, 82, and 85. And they'll be followed by William Henderson, Molly Anderson, and Maria Quintana, 86, 87, and 88.
And if you're in the queue, go ahead and come down here, and let's take the front seats here so we're ready to plug you right in. Who'd like to start? Ma'am, why don't you go kick us off?
Oh, great. is there a button I'm supposed to be pushing?
No.
Okay, good.
Just don't push his button. No, I'm kidding.
I'm testifying about the proposed extension of the campus zone S16 yes. measure between Boone's Ferry and Terwilliger.
Yeah, a little closer.
Okay.
Tell us your name for the record, please.
My name is Charlotte Joshi, and I'm testifying because this is something that has already been extensively researched in 2009. The campus has already tried to build buildings and already tried to extend their baseball field. There was extensive testimony, and it was found that it was not feasible. I want you to look back on that record. There, Lewis and Clark has now, this is a new guise for the same issue. And I want you to understand that the findings that the hearing officer were absolutely correct and based on transportation. The lay of the land is very hilly. There are not very many ways to get to Lake Oswego. And both where this property lies is in a fork that goes to both ends of Lake Oswego. It's heavily traveled. It's already at failure. It would be a nightmare to have more housing there, which is what the college originally planned to do, and more traffic. If you add pedestrians to the mix, it would be disastrous. It would block traffic for miles. It's really not feasible at all, and I don't understand why it's on the in the plan.
Thank you very much. Sir, would you like to go?
My name is Prakash Joshi, and I live in Collinsview neighborhood, and I am the transportation chair for the neighborhood. And I'm here to oppose S-16 as amended, as the amendment as proposed. And my issue is something that goes particularly to transportation, and I want to take you back to history just a little bit. And the history of this intersection is for 20 years we've been asking PBOT, and now it used to be PDOT, I think, and we've been asking for a long time to do something about this intersection, and nothing's been done because it gets, now we're in the comprehensive plan for 2035 or whatnot. We don't know where we stand with that, but we do know one thing. The traffic there is really bad, and the college has a very big, incidentally, I'm an alum of this college, and I love this college, and I live in this neighborhood. We've lived there for 37, 38 years. The college has a traffic demand management plan, and the city approved it, but they haven't lived up to this plan. It used to be that they used to provide the figures and the numbers and the tracking of what was going on at the college. We're tracking in the neighborhood, and it's up 16% this year alone. Last year, it was up 20%. So we're over 30% over the traffic that they say they would like to control. And they need to do this. The history of this property is that this property was designed when it was bought by the college. The college came to the neighborhood. We asked what we intend to do with this property. They told us it would be professor housing. It would be in line with the homes and the houses that are there. Subsequently, about 9 years ago, they applied for a 250-bed dormitory in this area and a 250-car garage. What was really missing here was the hearing officer did catch this, that the rationale for the car garage was that it would reduce traffic because since people would live there, they would go to college there. Well, people do live on this property today, the same people that they're hoping would live, law school students, and these students go all over the place. They come and go. They go to things they do. They're just like families. So what I'm here to say is that this is a very bad proposal coming through a channel that should not consider it in this manner. And it should be considered with the community as it was before because there's more to it than just having this thing go through.
Thank you very much for your time. Thank you both.
Thanks.
Sir, you're up.
Thank you, commissioners, for this opportunity. My name is Joseph Albert. I'm a Northeast Portland resident, and I'm here to speak in support of Amendment TSP 40116. This amendment concerns the relocation of a current city-designated bikeway from Northeast 7th to Northeast 9th. Passing the amendment would keep the bikeway on 7th. This is an active bikeway that is used 24/7. There are, in the middle of the night, even bicycles using this bikeway, very heavily used bikeway. The comp plan is calling for upgrading bikeways to major city bikeways or greenways, and there was an idea that maybe this should be relocated to 9th. And a number of organizations, such as the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, the Irvington, Sabin, King, and Elliott neighborhoods are opposed to this, associations are opposed to this change. And the reason is it would be an inferior bikeway. There is a hill between Knott and Siskiyou. There's also a hill going over Irving Park. A new path around the periphery of Irving Park would have to be built. It would go across the outfields of ball fields where children play organized baseball events and soccer events. There would be new signals to cross at Fremont, Prescott, and Alberta. These would impede the east-west traffic on those streets, which already have heavy traffic at rush hour, especially Fremont. And moreover, it would cost an extra $1 million to upgrade 9th to a major city bikeway in lieu of 7th. That by keeping it on 7th, that's $1 million to spend on other transportation priorities in this time when transportation dollars have been scarce and we're asking for a new tax for that purpose. And so for these reasons, I really would ask for your support of Amendment TSP 40116 to keep the bikeway on Northeast 7th. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. Carla, the next three.
Are William Henderson, Molly Anderson, and Maria Quintana, 86, 87, and 88. And they'll be followed by Lorraine Thornton, Milton Langton, and Mike Connors. I'm sorry, it's Lorraine Thornton, Greg Winterroud, and Milton Langton, 89, 91, and 92.
Okay, welcome. Sir, why don't you kick us off?
Sure. My name is William Henderson. I'm a CEO of Knock Software Incorporated in Portland, also a board member of Portland Independent Chamber of Commerce. I'm here to testify against proposed Amendment P11, which
would... Against what?
Amendment P11, This is regarding Portland's open data policy. It would effectively make it moot. So I've heard quite a bit of testimony about this, and this is coming at a time when there are a number of important issues on the table. So I want to clear up something that I think there's confusion about, which is why is this relevant to the comp plan, which is about land use and transportation. Today, we think about transportation mostly in terms of concrete and where we put paint. But in the future, transportation is really going to be about data. So we're planning right now for massive expansion of transit, of car and bike sharing, of self-driven, app-hailed vehicles. And all of these are fundamentally about the data behind them. What else is Uber cab, after all, than a bunch of drivers and riders with a powerful database connecting them? So this is all sort of heady stuff, but I want you to imagine a future, which increasingly we're seeing, where companies that are innovating with our shared road infrastructure are producing proprietary, locked-up data. Do we want this to be our future? If you have trouble imagining this future, look instead to our past. In 2005, TriMet became the first city to adopt the open GTFS standard. And thanks to that, we now have active and accurate transit schedule and route information that's available to everyone. So this openness has helped countless companies, including Portland's own Globe Sherpa, innovate and have led to a much better transit system. It's smarter and it's more effective. It could have easily gone another way. This was just some individual citizens who were advocating for this to be an open standard. My company, Knox Software, makes tools for city planning, and we leverage these kinds of open data sources. We believe the data should be open, but we face a kind of prisoner's dilemma here, which is we want to make it open so that our competitors can potentially use it, but what if they do the opposite? What if they lock us out of their data? We have no incentive to open the data, even though this is what we want to do. And this is why it's so important that the cities adopt these policies. They're the only ones who can level the playing field and lead to much more innovative and effective transportation systems. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Ma'am, would you like to go?
Yes. My name is Molly Anderson. I reside at 1655 South.
We don't need your address. That's okay.
Oh, sorry. Thank you, commissioners, for hearing my testimony today. I'm here because I oppose Amendment M35 in the comp plan. This is the amendment proposed by an Alaskan land management and development company, Brummel Enterprises, to upzone several properties in Selwood with disregard to the current residents and the infrastructure of the neighborhood. The property I'm most concerned with is located directly next door to my home at 1665 Southeast Spokane Street, with a request to change zoning from R2.5 to CM2 mixed-use commercial. This beautiful 100-year-old home is currently a rental property housing upwards of 11 people belonging to a neighborhood church organization. It plays a role in affordably housing residents that contribute to the economic diversity of our neighborhood. We're just up the street from Bertie Lou's Cafe on busy 17th Avenue. Like all of the main thoroughfares in Selwood, once you turn off 17th, the busyness drops away and you're on a residential street of single-family homes. Young children run back and forth between the houses and neighbors talk to one another. It's a large part of why I chose to make my family's home here. The threat of a four-story apartment building and retail space looming over my single-story house causes me great anxiety. Not only does it raise safety concerns for my children and threaten to break down community on my street, it would block light to my backyard where I grow a large portion of my family's food. Street parking is also currently at capacity. I enjoy being able to walk to the many businesses and restaurants along 13th and 17th Avenue, but would never have bought a house next to a commercially zoned property. Brummel Enterprises claim that they want the neighborhood to be involved in this process. They did not make their request known to me, and I own the house next door. I found out about this amendment via social media. When I went door-to-door in my neighborhood to raise awareness, no one else knew this was happening either. I did not find a single person in a two-block radius that was in favor of the upzoning. After attending a Smile Land Use Committee meeting and hearing of their opposition to Amendment M35 and their lack of faith in Brummel Enterprises, I know this company is not to be trusted with the future of my community. There are several apartment buildings going up at breakneck speed in Selwood. I urge you to allow for the area to be fully developed as zoned to protect the integrity of the neighborhood. Thanks for your consideration.
Nice job getting through the whole statement in 2 minutes.
I practiced.
And we have the written. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Sir, you're up.
My name is Milton Langton. I live at 1801 Southwest 61st Drive in the Sylvan area. I'm opposed to N14, an amendment to the proposed comprehensive plan applicable to 6141 Southwest Canyon Court. This rump proposal amendment conflicts with the proposed of the planning staff, the planning commission, conflicts with the Sylvan Hills Neighborhood Association. It conflicts with most of the people in the area, everyone that I know of. except the owner. The owner bought a house in R20, fully developed area, paid too much for it. His wife didn't like it, so he tried to get his mother-in-law to move into it. She didn't like it, so he rented it for several years, almost 10 years now, and he had a tough time getting the rent to justify the price that he paid for it. So now he wants to have a rump proposal of downzoning to R5. I'm familiar with and in accordance with a downzoning when it's appropriate. I think we need multifamily. I think we need smaller houses, less expensive houses. But you don't do that in a fully built-up neighborhood. This is a dangerous street. Southwest 61st Drive is the real address. He has a retaining wall that's about 18 feet high that prevents him to have any access to Southwest Canyon Court. That is a very, Southwest 61st Drive is a very steep ending of the thing, and the driveway is very steep. Each of my kids have got hit with bicycles in front of my house, which is next to his house.
Mr. Langton, I'm going to have to ask you just to wrap up. We have
the
you clearly.
The Neighborhood Association is opposed. Everyone is opposed except the person who wants to make some money out of it.
So we have you as no and N14. Thank you very much. Thank you all. Carla, the next three, please.
Are Maria Quintana, Lorraine Thornton, and Greg Winterroud. And they'll be followed by Mike Connors, Erwin Bergman, and Marty Suchek.
Why don't you kick us off, Izzy?
Hi there, my name is Mariah, and I'm here to oppose Amendment M33. This is regarding the industrial overlay that goes over the Broadmoor Golf Course and also neighborhoods that surround it. There is over 57 acres of wetlands that would be developed if Broadmoor were to ever sell. Whereas just down the street, you can find lots that are open and have not been developed, and it looks as though those places would be just as fine, and we could keep Broadmoor as what it is currently. I'm sorry, I'm very nervous.
By the way, you're doing a great job.
Thank you. Also, the residents in that neighborhood that lines up with the golf course are really concerned about the problems that would arise with industrial overlay. We, as a resident myself, are lined up against the Buffalo Slough, which is just south of the Columbia Slough, and we every day get to see wildlife, which has, despite years and years of industrial pollution, survived and flourished, and it would be a shame to see all of the work that the city of Portland has done go to waste by having this industrial overlay and having the plan for that part of Portland become industrialization. We are already surrounded by that, and it's still amazing that there is wildlife and that we can still have such a dynamic environment through there. We have industrial, we have the slough, we have all of it, and it would be nice to keep it that way for the foreseeable future.
And could I get your full name? It's Mariah or Maria?
Mariah Quintana.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Lorraine Thornton. I live at 735 North Fremont. My testimony is for Amendment M42. I've been living in Boise Elliott neighborhood for almost 10 years, and I've seen streets redesigned, which I feel made it worse, traffic lights, which seemed to be on every corner, causing more dense traffic, high-rise buildings replacing the trees, allowing the fresh air to be stagnant, more traffic, noise from construction workers, car alarms, combustion, and pollution. There are restless nights and days because the area just doesn't shut down. There are places like a church and elementary school that makes a neighborhood. These places are my neighborhood, my community. There are children that attend the Boise Elliott Elementary, and how can we protect them from this influx of traffic? Crosswalks and school signs are seen when the school is in session. But what about when it's after school, summertime, when the children are playing on the streets or in their yards? How do we protect these innocent lives then? The neighborhood is looking more and more like an industrial area than a peaceful family neighborhood it once was. Oh, gosh, I got nervous now. Why? Adding more buildings in an already crowded area will just add on more issues of safety and parking. Who will benefit? Surely not the poor individuals. I do not see this as an equal balance when the poor is subjected to a high-priced grocery store and a vast amount of condos, apartments erected around us. With this expansion allows gentrification, which in turn allows possibility of displacement of human beings and animals, if any. And for those reasons, I oppose the amendment. I ask that my plea to save my neighborhood, my community from more gentrification will not be unheeded. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome, sir.
Hello, my name is Greg Winterode with Winterbrook Planning. I'm testifying on item F83. We represent Run Our Dream, LLC, who is the developer of the YMCA building, which was just approved for use by Under Armour Corporation as their regional headquarters. We are concerned about the proposed amendment from mixed-use urban center to mixed-use neighborhood, because we don't believe we meet the definition of a local serving commercial use. We are definitely a regional use that belongs in the urban center designation. I have submitted written testimony that goes into more detail. I will now also reassure you that we are working with the Neighborhood Association on this project. We met with them last night, and we are having good results as a result of those discussions. And I will close my testimony in the interest of getting through this quickly.
Thank you for your detailed testimony, sir.
Just to clarify, the current redevelopment is being done at the current zoning, correct?
It's being done at the current zoning. And we are proposing a fourth floor and have a design advice, which would not be allowed by the current zoning, which is why the mixed-use urban center is important.
But you want only one more floor. You don't need three more floors.
No, we need one more floor, correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Carla, next three, please.
Are Mike Connors, Erwin Bergman, and Marty Suchek. And they'll be followed by Jenny Boyce, Susan Carr, and Joe Rossi.
Erwin, you're first up. Welcome, and why don't you kick us off?
Oh, thank you. Well, welcome. Commissioners, my name is Erwin Bergman. I'm a longtime member with the Columbia Slough Watershed Council. And there will be a bit of redundancy here in my testimony, but I think as a true believer in the Columbia Slough, I think it should be appropriate. And I'm here to share with you my concern and strong opposition to Amendment M33, the proposed upzoning of 57 acres of the Broadmoor Golf Course to an industrial designation. It would be a very unfortunate, if not tragic, event for all the people of Portland to lose one of its vestiges of nature and its past. The majority of the site is within a designated environmental overlay, an area of city the city recognizes has highly significant resources and functional values. The entire site also ranks as high value on the regional natural resource inventory. The site is bordered on three sides by waterways and wetlands, including Columbia Slough, the Catkin Marsh wetlands, and the port mitigation and enhancement parcels. The site contains more than an entire mile of riparian habitat. Eliminating this site will leave the surrounding habitat fragmented. It is rated as one of the most important wildlife complexes on the Slough. The site also has a most impressive stand of massive trees, including large giant sequoias, just like the ones the Southeast Portland community fought to save. How about Portland, the city of trees, to cut or to treasure them? Analysis by the Industrial Health and Watershed Health Work Group and the Planning and Sustainability Commission indicates that designating the Broadmoor parcel is better suited as open space and habitat than industrial land. It doesn't offer significant job potential. Terrain features together with its very extensive E and Z zone will make necessary infrastructure placement extremely challenging and expensive. And I guess
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ma'am, why don't you go ahead?
Me. I'm Marty Suchak. I'm here about Amendment P-45, is it? You know, the one, the middle housing one. But I'd like to, I hope I have time to make a comment on another amendment that was spoken to earlier. I'm not against middle housing. I'm against this amendment for a couple of reasons. The first important thing is that we could have a lot of middle housing if we required some ADUs be developed on some of the lots that where we're demolishing houses or not. But that's another matter we don't seem capable as a city to address. The two reasons I'm against this is that this whole process has gone on for 2 years, but this amendment with significant implication has come up in a month. And it has not gone through the public process. It should have gone through. And for that reason, I request that the record remain open and that the public gets to address this as much as, for example, the city club. And there are tens of thousands of us who aren't in the city club. Many of us would be asked to leave if we were. The other reason that I want to say is the problem I have with this is not that I'm against middle housing. I'm against this. Apply zoning that would allow within a quarter of a mile of designated centers where appropriate and within the inner ring of the central city. That's fine. But doing it through the zoning code, we have no certainty about what our neighborhoods are going to look like. This could easily result, despite what the city plan, the planning bureaus say, despite that, we're not going to get adequate public input on it, and you know it. We're going to have the zoning code applied, and we're going to have a mosaic. We're going to have things that the norms and standards and ethos of professional planners used to oppose. They were anathema to it. We're going to have a big mess, and we're going to have a lot of angry people, and we're going to have a lot of lost trees. The second thing I'd like to say is that I support the upzoning of Eastmoreland. I'm from Multnomah. If you do not upzone it, you put all those trees at risk because of the 5,000 square foot lot exemption in the tree code. And this whole thing is revealing this flaw, Commissioner Miss Fish, that these things collide. That one of the goals of the comprehensive plan is preservation of the environment. The tree code also tries to protect trees. The 5,000 square foot lot exemption is going to take down a lot of trees, and we don't need to. Somebody said we all need to bear the burden of this. That proves that they think density is a punishment. I don't think it is a punishment. And so I
ask you to wrap up.
I think we need to have choices in our neighborhoods. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
For indulging me.
Thank
See,
you.
I'd be asked to leave, too.
No. You are always welcome, as you know, in this house. Sir?
Thank you, Commissioners. My name is Mike Connors. I'm here on behalf of Hayden Island Enterprises. They're the owners and operators of the Hayden Island Manufactured Home Park. I'm here to testify with respect to Amendment P-48. That's an amendment that Commissioner Fritz sponsored, and it was an amendment that was proposed in response to comments that we made back in November of 2015. We support the amendment. We very much appreciate Commissioner's support of it. However, we are asking that the commission consider more specific language. And really, this is in a letter that I submitted to you today. Really, the issue comes down to this. The amendment has very general language about facilitating replacement and alteration of manufactured homes within an existing manufactured home park. Our more specific issue is that our park is a recognized nonconforming use. And in a typical, it's because it doesn't comply with the development standards, the current development standards. In a typical nonconforming use situation, if a owner were to replace, remove, or significantly alter a structure, it requires that the entire site be brought up to compliance with the current development standards. As you can appreciate, a manufactured home park is in a unique situation because there's more temporary structures there. And so my client wants to make sure that to the extent homes are being removed and replaced, that's not going to trigger a requirement. This is an issue that prior to my representation of my client, they went through and got a letter from the city recognizing or acknowledging consistency with our interpretation. But we're asking you to adopt a formal policy because when my client goes through financing, for instance, a letter from the city attorney's office doesn't need meet isn't as valuable as much as an actual official policy in the comprehensive plan.
Just to clarify, the policy that I've proposed in the comprehensive plan would allow this specific language that you've presented to be put into the zoning code. It goes in the zoning code, though not in the comprehensive plan.
That's great. If that's what you're willing to do, then we're okay with that, whether it's a comprehensive plan or the zoning code.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz has been following this issue probably the closest of anyone in the council, but the magic of your client's property is it's not just the manufactured homes. It's the locations for people who can temporarily live there, a construction foreman, someone working at the circus or whatever, to get a lease space, plug in, get services. We're not proposing to do anything that prevents that from happening going forward, are we?
No. Really what it amounts to is what happens when a home is removed and replaced with a new home. There's an ambiguity or question in the code as to whether that triggers the entire park to be brought up to compliance with the current standards.
I'm sure we'll look closely at that. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Carla, next three, please.
Are Jenny Boyce, Susan Carr, and Joe Rossi. That's 102, 106, and 107. And they'll be followed by 112, Paulette Rossi, 114, Sue Stringer, and 116, Tom Karwacki.
So you're first up. Why don't you?
Okay. I'm here in regards.
First.
Oh, my name is Jenny Boyce. I'm here in regards to the notice I received about my area of Portland, M45, being rezoned for high-density residential and mixed-use buildings. It's the area between Northeast Halsey, Highway 84, 57th, and 63rd. And it's very different than north of Halsey. Economically, diversity-wise. I bought my house in 2011 at the end of the crash and didn't make a lot of money. That's the only way I was able to buy it. If I sold it now, it would only be worth $200,000, and I couldn't buy another home in Portland. This is the case for a lot of people in that area. I love my little neighborhood. It's made up of working-class families, racially very diverse, age-wise, very diverse, and it feels like the Portland that we're losing so quickly with all the development, and that our culture of Portland is becoming more middle-class, hipster, white, which I am, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I love diversity as well, and I get that density is important. I believe that it's a design for a more ecological, healthy city, but I also see diversity of place, class, race, age, etc., as necessary for a healthy city. I received the notice a month ago, and so I walked around my neighborhood and handed out a flyer about it and talked to several people who didn't know about it and weren't very enthusiastic about those changes. Some people were. Some people are excited about selling their house, but most weren't. And most people would be displaced, wouldn't have another place to go. I talked to a woman who lives in a fourplex apartment building. What does that mean? I need to stop.
You can wrap up, yeah.
Who's been there for 40 years. It's a rental. She's an older woman. She would have no place to go. So I think we can be more creative than this. Instead of displacing people, it's a creative city. We can figure this out, ways to do it. I don't have those ideas, so that people aren't displaced. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
I'm not clear. I'm sorry. Do you support the amendment
or
you don't? Okay, thank you. And I understand the reasoning now that you told me.
Ma'am, go ahead.
My name is Susan Carr, and I am here to oppose M35 in Selwood, the rezone on Southeast 16th. 17th and Sherritt. I live on Southeast 16th, 8412, around the corner from the block that is in question for the rezone. There are a number of properties that the Brummel Enterprises has requested. It seems like they're on somewhat of a fishing expedition to rezone a number of different properties. And when we heard from the at the March 30th Smile Land Use Committee meeting, the agent for Brummel had no specific details about what they wanted to propose. It was very vague language of a four-story building that would be very nice and to trust them. Sherritt is a very small street. Even living on 16th, we do not use Sherritt because it's a harder street to get in and out of. Our neighbor across the street is the Selwood Middle School playfield, so we're very aware of the ins and outs of the traffic with the playfields and the, all the sports teams that use the playfield. Plus the fact, you probably are well aware, there's just a lot of traffic with parents that the school generates, and 16th being away from the main part of the school receives a lot of parents waiting for their children, and they have to access 16th from one direction or another, and usually it's either Sherritt or Harney on either side. The Brummels are also an out-of-state developer, which was pointed out by someone else previously. No one would stand to benefit but the Brummels. Selwood has a number of different apartment buildings already in appropriately zoned areas. Selwood also is increasing its density with a number of new proposed projects, as well as their when there has been current demolition, at least in our part of Selwood, a duplex or a triplex has replaced the single family that had been there before. I urge you to reconsider on this one or not pass it through. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now we'll hear from Gabriella's father.
Thank you. Thank you. Joe Rossi representing three families, the Gary, Giusto, and Rossi families on Amendment F-72. First, I want to express my appreciation to staff being patient with me to help me understand the 2035 process and its goals, and then to develop a plan that best meets that. The two primary ones that stand out to me are middle density housing opportunities and complete community, especially walking community. I'm testifying in support of F-72 with just one minor ask for a slight change. First, what my support is on, everything's been decided on the east side of 122nd. Staff shifted some of the density closer to Shaver Street and away from the neighborhood on the south. I think that was very appropriate. It's closer to the street and away from the neighborhood, so we welcome that. On the west side of 122nd, first I want to point out how much R7 is on the map. We're just really swimming in an ocean of R7 here. And what we're really missing is enough density to actually support our neighborhood commercial, which is why it has never been there. So I think this fits in within those goals, especially between the three school buildings, elementary, high school, and middle school, and the new parks, which we're really blessed to have. On the west side of 122nd, the only thing we're asking for is that to look closer at that R3. In that dotted line in the left lower left corner, we have some R3 mixed with commercial corridor. I'd like that change to all commercial corridor to better integrate the housing component. I kind of see a 50-50 mix there, and if we had an all-commercial corridor, we could shift some of the densities maybe up above the commercial, and I think we'd have a better project and something nicer. So,
thank you very much, Joe. So we're going to call three more people. Just a time check. Because we had over 100 people who signed up, it's, I think, increasingly unlikely we're going to be able to finish up today, and we'll do another time check around 4:30, and if it looks like there's still a big chunk of people left to testify, we may decide to suspend closer to 5 and then just put people on first at the final hearing. But we'll play it by ear. Carla, the next three, please.
Are Paulette Rossi, Sue Stringer, and Tom Karwacki. And then we seem to have missed 97 and 98. Matt Ferris, Smith, Charles So, and Howard Patterson will be after this group here.
Why don't we take, who are we missing? Come on, go ahead. Ma'am, why don't you get started?
Hello, my name is Susan Stringer. I'm a resident of the Elliott neighborhood. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on Amendment TSP 40116 in support of the proposed greenway on Northeast 7th Avenue. For many years, neighbors on 7th Avenue have seen a lot of unsafe traffic behaviors, mainly from frustrated commuters avoiding MLK. They are cutting through the neighborhood, using 7th Avenue as their route, driving faster than posted speed limits, refusing to stop for pedestrians, and rarely yielding to cyclists. Currently, 7th Avenue is a de facto bike route. In addition, hundreds of pedestrians use this street, including children that attend Albina Head Start, King, and Irvington schools, as well as residents walking to take public transportation. Keeping all people safe that are using 7th should be a priority. A group of neighbors got together and realized that the BTA, Bike Loud PDX, Go Lloyd, Northeast Broadway Widler Alliance, and King, Elliott, and Irvington Neighborhood Associations were among the organizations that had the same vision as residents who also supported the Greenway.